Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're digging into a really fascinating piece of ancient scripture, Nehemiah chapter 13, our goal, to look at some pretty bold reforms Nehemiah made and see, you know, what timeless lessons we can pull out for strengthening our own trust, our relationship with God today. Mm-hmm. So picture this. Nehemiah, he's been away for a while, leading things, getting Jerusalem back on its feet spiritually. He leaves, comes back, and, well, things have slipped. Badly. He finds this community that he'd worked so hard with and their commitments, they've kind of crumbled. It's a picture of a serious spiritual decline.
It really is quite dramatic. The text mentions he was gone until the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes of Persia. That's maybe, what, 12 years or so?
A long time.
Long enough, yeah. Long enough for that initial faithfulness to drift. People slowly moved away from the laws and practices they had agreed to follow. It shows how easily things can unravel without constant attention, you know?
Right. So he walks back into the situation. The community's clearly lost focus.
Yeah.
What were the main things he found? Where had they gone wrong?
He basically zeroes in on four key areas where things had really broken down. The first one is pretty startling. Temple desecration and unholy alliances. He discovers that Eliashib, the high priest himself, the guy in charge of the temple's holiness, had actually become buddies with Tobiah.
Tobiah. Wasn't he one of their biggest enemies, always trying to stop the rebuilding?
Exactly. A major adversary. And Eliashib hadn't just made friends. He'd given Tobiah a large storeroom, a great chamber, right inside the temple complex.
Inside the temple, wow. That's unbelievable disrespect. And that room wasn't just any old closet, was it?
No. It was specifically meant for the sacred stuff, the grain offerings, the frankincense, the temple vessels, and importantly, the tithes intended for the Levites and singers and gatekeepers, the very people running the temple worship.
So an enemy is basically squatting in the space meant for God's provisions and worship supplies.
Precisely. And it's fascinating, isn't it? How maybe convenience or perhaps some perceived political advantage leads someone like the high priest to compromise something so sacred.
Yeah, it makes you think. Prioritizing a relationship over reverence for God's house, are there subtle Tobias we let into our sacred spaces?
That's the question it raises. Okay, so the second compromise Nehemiah found was directly related. The neglect of spiritual support and ministry. Because Tobiah was in that storeroom, and because of a general lapse, Nehemiah saw that the portions, the food and support meant for the Levites and singers, weren't being given to them.
Ah, so the people actually doing the work in the temple, leading the worship, teaching, they weren't being supported.
Correct. And the result, the text says they'd all gone back to his field. They basically had to abandon their ministry posts to go earn a living elsewhere.
That's huge. If your spiritual leaders can't afford to lead, the whole system falls apart. The house of God is essentially abandoned.
That's exactly what Nehemiah says happened. The house of God was forsaken. It just underscores how crucial it is to consistently support those dedicated to spiritual work. Without it, the structure just crumbles. Then, the third big issue, profanation of the Sabbath. Nehemiah sees people in Judah working hard on the Sabbath, treading grapes in the wine presses, hauling grain, loading up donkeys with wine, grapes, figs, all sorts of goods, and bringing them into Jerusalem on the day meant for rest.
So blatant disregard for a core commandment. And it wasn't hidden.
No, wide open. And it wasn't just them. He saw merchants from Tyre setting up shops, selling fish, and all kinds of wares right there in Jerusalem on the Sabbath.
Wow. So commerce completely overstepping sacred time. Nehemiah must have been furious. He even reminded them this is what got their ancestors into trouble, right?
He did. He connects it directly to their past judgment. It really makes you pause and think, doesn't it? How easily economic pressures or just, you know, the busyness of life can push aside something vital like honoring sacred time. That temptation is always there. And the fourth major area, this one hits close to home for the future. Unholy marriages and the erosion of identity. Nehemiah finds that many Jewish men had married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. These are the surrounding nations who didn't worship God in the same way.
And the problem wasn't ethnicity itself, but the differing faiths.
Exactly. It was about shared values and spiritual direction, and the impact was immediate. He notes their children couldn't even speak Hebrew properly. They spoke a mix, half in the speech of Ashdod.
So the next generation was already losing its connection to their heritage, their language, their unique covenant relationship with God.
Right. And it gets worse. He finds out that even one of the high priest Eliashib's grandsons had married the daughter of Sanballat the Horonite.
Another major enemy.
Yeah.
Like Tobiah. So corruption right at the top, influencing family lines.
Yes. It threatened the whole spiritual identity of the community going forward. Nehemiah even points to King Solomon, wise King Solomon, who was led astray by foreign wives. It was a serious warning about compromising core spiritual commitments through these alliances.
Okay, so pretty bleak picture. Temple issues, lack of support, Sabbath ignored, compromising marriages. But Nehemiah didn't just throw up his hands, did he? He took action.
Yeah.
What can we learn from his rather bold reforms for our lives today?
Absolutely. His actions are quite dramatic, but they offer powerful models. First, dealing with the temple mess. He didn't negotiate. He literally cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah, threw it out. Then he ordered the chambers purified and put the sacred items back. The application for us: clean house. Be decisive. When you see compromise creeping into your sacred spaces, maybe it's harmful media, unhealthy relationships, attitudes that dishonor God, don't tolerate it. Clear it out. Protect what's holy in your life. That act itself builds trust, showing God you're serious about his standards.
Okay, decisive action. What about the neglected Levites?
Right. He didn't just complain. He contended with the rulers, basically held them accountable. He regathered the Levites, reinstated the tithe system, and appointed trustworthy treasurers to make sure the support actually got distributed. So for us, restore support for spiritual work. We need to actively value and invest in God's work and those who lead it. Whether it's time, talents, finances, supporting spiritual ministry strengthens your own relationship with God because you're investing in his kingdom.
Makes sense. And the Sabbath. He got pretty tough there too, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He confronted the nobles. He ordered the city gates shut before the Sabbath began and kept them shut until it was over. He even posted his own guards. When merchants camped outside hoping to sell later, he threatened them. He also had the Levites purify themselves and guard the gates to keep the day holy. The lesson: uphold sacred time and boundaries. Be vigilant. Guard your times of rest, reflection, and worship. Treat them as truly sacred, protected from the constant demands of work and distraction. In our 24/7 world, setting those boundaries is a powerful act of trusting God.
It really is. Okay, finally, the marriages. His reaction seems intense.
It was intense. The text says he contended with them, cursed them, struck some, even pulled out their hair. He made them swear an oath to God to stop these marriages and chased away the high priest's grandson who had allied with Sanballat. He cleansed them from all strangers.
Pretty extreme, but the principle underneath.
It's about protecting spiritual purity in relationships. We need to be incredibly intentional about who we form close bonds with. Surround yourself with people who build up your faith, whose values align with God's purposes. This isn't about exclusion, but about wisdom fostering environments where your relationship with God can thrive, not be slowly eroded.
That really ties it all together. It seems the big message from Nehemiah 13 is that faith isn't just about starting strong. It's about enduring. It's about the consistent vigilance needed to protect what matters spiritually and having the courage to take action, to clean house when things go wrong.
Well said. And think about Nehemiah's constant prayer throughout the book, and especially here. Remember me, O my God, for good. It's not prideful. It's this deep-seated belief that God sees our efforts to be faithful, to uphold his ways, even when it's hard. That should encourage us, knowing our commitment matters to him.
Absolutely. A powerful reminder. So the question for all of us listening today, as we think about Nehemiah's example, how will you apply this information in your life? What steps might you need to take to strengthen your own trust and relationship with God?